Welcome to the Short Term Show, the show about short-term rentals and long-term wealth, with real property owners hosting real properties who are crushing it in the vacation and short-term rental space. And here's your host, Avery Carl.
This episode of the Short Term Show is brought to you by The Short Term Shop. 30-year fixed mortgages, tax benefits, and long-distance management training made easy are just a few of the perks of owning a short-term rental. The Short Term Shop can help you buy and learn how to manage your property from anywhere in the world. Just go to theshorttermshop.com and click Get Connected. Again, that's theshorttermshop.com, and we are brokered by eXp. See y'all over there. If you invest in real estate or manage properties, you need banking that's truly built for your business. Many traditional banks make it difficult to sync banking information across many of the personal finance platforms that we as real estate investors use every day. This is why I recommend Relay. Relay is an online banking and money management platform that's a perfect fit for any real estate business. First, there are no account fees, no overdraft fees, and no minimum balances, which means you get to keep more money in your pocket. Relay also goes above and beyond the banking basics to help you understand precisely what you're earning, spending, and saving. You get up to 20 checking accounts to organize and allocate income for things like day-to-day expenses, investments, or taxes. And if you have multiple investment properties set up as separate business entities, that's no problem. Relay lets you open unlimited accounts and access everything from one single login. Best of all, Relay makes your bookkeeping speedy and meticulous by giving you ultra-detailed transaction data and directly syncing it back to QuickBooks Online and Xero. The ability to have so many separate bank accounts and allocation options in my user dashboard has really transformed my personal banking experience. I will never go back. It takes 10 minutes to apply for a Relay account, and you can do it online at relayfi.com/theshorttermshop. So again, for more information and to open an account, go to relayfi.com/theshorttermshop. Hey guys, welcome back to the Short Term Show. We've got a really cool show for you today. We have several top short-term rental agents in four different states. And we're going to talk about what it looks like to get a deal in the current market. And I'm going to go ahead and introduce everybody, and then we'll kind of get into the nuts and bolts of everything. So first person, you might recognize him from past episodes, Mr. Derek Tellier. How's it going, Derek?
It's going super fantastic, Avery. Appreciate you having me on. I am currently working in the Gulf Shores, Alabama market. I used to work in the Smoky Mountain market. I still have a lot of experience and still dabble out there a little bit, but my primary market right now is Gulf Shores, and looking forward to getting into the nuts and bolts here.
Awesome. Next, we have Tim Grillo. Y'all might recognize his poodle dachshund rescue from Facebook. It's everywhere.
Good morning, everybody. I don't have Clyde with me, but my name's Tim. I'm in the Smoky Mountains and own several properties here and a couple other markets as well, but live in the Smokies and love to talk about it. So excited for today. Appreciate you having me.
Thanks for coming on, Tim. Next, we have Jeff Brown in the Emerald Coast. How's it going, Jeff?
Hi. Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm in the Emerald Coast, Florida market. I grew up in Alabama, moved down here about 7 years ago, and haven't looked back. You know, the scenery down here is awesome, and ended up getting into real estate with you guys and love it.
Awesome. We almost had you. Texas almost had Bama 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
Luckiest team in football. Everybody knows it. Anyway, last but certainly not least, Kelsey in Crystal Beach / Galveston area of Texas, Texas Gulf Coast. How's it going, Kelsey?
Oh, good. I joined the team after I bought my house in the Smokies, and now I have one here in Crystal Beach. Help people buy beach properties every day.
Awesome, guys. So we've got a large pool of experience here. So everybody here does a lot of short-term rental deals for clients. So everybody has been in the trenches for the past several years. And between all of us, we have seen it all when it comes to short-term rental deals. So we're going to talk a little bit about that today, what getting a deal looks like in today's market. So I guess I'll start with, you know, last year, a deal does not necessarily mean how much money you can get off of the purchase price. A deal can be a really good deal at $20,000 over the purchase price. So I want to get that out of the way, that a deal doesn't necessarily mean X amount off of the purchase price. However, this is the best time in the past few years to be able to get quite a bit off of the purchase price with the uncertainty in the market. So we're going to talk a little bit about that too. So I'll start with you, Derek. What is something that you see often, or what is your favorite thing to look for in a property in order to find deals right now for clients or for yourself?
Well, the most important thing is as you mentioned, is running numbers. You need to know what numbers work for you. And that's going to start with getting some idea of what that property is going to generate as far as income goes. And you have to work backwards from that. And, you know, you can be conservative as you want on that aspect of things. So if you want to look at 2019 numbers or 2018 numbers or whatever it is that works for you, figure out what that number is. Yes, purchase price is going to be what puts it on your radar, but then run from there. Now, the key to that then is, okay, this property looks good enough at purchase at list price that I would even consider it, which is the first thing. And then if that's the case, figure out what number makes sense for you. Now, what we have an advantage of today is we don't have to start there, you know, drop it down. I mean, if, you know, most people should be, if you're not familiar with Never Split the Difference, great book by Chris Voss about negotiating, you know, start with a low ball offer if you want, if you feel you need to, but know what your max number is and then work up from there. But start with knowing revenues, knowing what kind of revenue it can make, and then run your own numbers. Interest rates are high, so make sure it works for you. Know that down the road, you're going to be able to refinance that thing. You're going to get that rate down at some point. So don't get too hung up on the numbers today. But at the same time, don't buy a bad deal. There's good deals out there every day, but you're going to have to look harder to find them. And it just starts with what jumps out at you. What do you like? And then run some numbers.
Absolutely agree with that. One thing that I've been noticing lately is that, yeah, interest rates are at the top of the conversation everywhere, as they should be. And yeah, interest rates are not what they were. They're a lot more expensive now. But at the end of the day, they're still just a line item. They've always been just a line item. And you just kind of have to adjust the rest of your analysis to, or what type of property you're choosing to kind of combat those interest rates. So, you know, maybe you're not buying the $2 million house. Maybe you're buying, you know, a $600,000 house. But one thing that I want to make clear is that you can change the interest rate later, assuming rates go down. I'm not making any promises or crystal ball talk here or anything. But one thing you can never change about a property is the price that you paid for it. So if you're able to get a good deal on the price up front, as long as the numbers still work, you can make the numbers work better later if you can get that refinance into a lower interest rate. So that's something that I wanted to hit on, is you can never change what you paid for a property, but you can change the interest rate. And let's see, what else? So Jeff, what are you seeing in terms of getting deals and analysis paralysis stopping people from getting there?
So I've had a couple people recently that, without getting into specifics of it, had basically ruined their 1031 just because they had analyzed themselves out of the deal. They just got scared afterwards and it ended up tanking their 1031. So they lost that amount of money. And that's never just kind of a from zero loss. Like, it's the gap of it is you either use the money or you lose the money. It's never a zero, you know? So the gap for one guy ended up being around 50,000 that he ended up losing whenever he did it. And he ended up backing out of the contract just because he had analyzed himself out of it. He thought that it wasn't going to happen, and ended up being a really good deal, in my opinion, that I thought was going to do well for him. But at the end of the day, he just thought too much about it and wanted to back out.
I think that is happening a lot in the current market. People will be under contract on something, and then some news will come out from the Fed or the inflation report will come out, and they will get scared and drop a deal that could have been a really good deal because they're afraid of it. You know, actually, in Florida specifically, I think there's some unique opportunity because people are also afraid of the insurance right now, which is being worked on. The governor's involved in getting insurance back to a manageable level. So I really think there's a lot of opportunity in condos, condos and short-term rental specific developments right now. What do you think about that?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of condos here that that are really good. And even with the non-warrantable lending on them, it still ends up being pretty good. There are some non-warrantable loans out there that you can get this 15% down, no PMI, that end up working out really well as far as the entry cost. And then on top of that, I mean, your condos most of the time here are going to be waterfront anyway, and that's going to end up being really good as far as differentiating yourself from the 50th percentile numbers to the 75th percentile numbers when we're talking about the AirDNA stuff. So you can end up making a lot more with beachfront property whenever you're looking at condos. Not the same whenever it comes to townhomes and single family, just because of the increased maintenance and whatnot. But with condos, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. And the insurance is going to be cheaper typically with condos because your condo fees, your HOA fees are going to cover some of that insurance too. So I think there's a lot of opportunity in condos if you're buying in the right building. I know some people are probably listening to this going, no way, condos can outlaw short-term rentals so easily. But if you're buying in the right market, in the right development, condos are a really good opportunity. Actually, Tim owns some condos in Gulf Shores. What's your experience been with your condos?
Fantastic. We've got two of them in Gulf Shores and they crush it. I mean, we have condos there and we've got cabins in the Smokies and really the returns are about the same. And interestingly, it's like, the condos are actually up this year. So they're doing great. They're beachfront, too little, they're little, they're like 700 square foot, but they stay packed all the time.
Awesome.
Yeah. Gulf Shores, speaking of Gulf Shores, I mean, yeah, condos insurance is a lot like your interest rate. It can change and it can go down. We are seeing higher insurance rates right now. Gulf Shores got hit with a hurricane 2 years ago, and they're really starting to feel that right now where rates going up.
My rates went up a lot. And speaking of that, and talking about fear and stuff, like Derek said, it's temporary, but the rates have gone up. My rates almost tripled, but it's still insignificant. I guess is the best way to put it. I mean, my insurance rates are still barely a blip on the radar compared to the income coming in. So yeah, it's a bummer they went up, but it's going to go back down. And even with them up, they're still performing well.
And I think the key there is when you're doing your analysis is leave cushion, leave room. We're going to be high on interest rates. We're going to be high on insurance right now if you're on that Florida or anywhere on the Gulf Coast, Alabama. So recognize that it still has to work. Don't buy it if it's going to lose money based on current today's rates. Make a deal that works. But even if it's a little bit thinner than you'd like to be, not significantly thinner, but a little bit thinner, recognize that those rates and those on both insurance and interest are going to come down at some point. Hopefully, again, no crystal ball, like Avery said, but they're probably, history shows us that these things go up and down and we're at a peak right now on these. So in time, they're going to come back down and it's going to increase your cash flow. Make sure it works today, but don't get caught in that analysis paralysis. How many thousands or millions of people have we heard or seen over the years that have said, I'm waiting for the next, correction or the crash, whatever people want to call it, for prices to come down. And I'm going to be ready to pounce and ready to buy. And, we're starting to see a little bit of that. It's not going to be like it was in, 8, 9, 10. It's just not going to be that significant of a dip. But we're seeing that dip. And what are we seeing is all those people that said that, a lot of them are getting into significant paralysis and not taking action because it sounded good at the time. But when it becomes reality, everybody gets scared. And you have to get past that. And having a trusted agent, having somebody that knows the market work with you to help you through it is key. We're not going to let you buy something that's terrible and not going to work. We're going to question you and make sure that you're doing something that makes sense.
Absolutely. And I think that trying to time where the exact bottom or the exact top of a market is like trying to catch a falling knife. Like you might get lucky, the general direction that it's going, but catching it at exactly the right time is nearly impossible and would take just a lot of luck. So I think a lot of people too, like, well, I'm going to wait for it to drop more. I'm going to wait for it to drop more, but you can get out there right now and make low offers and get things accepted. Like Tim's going to kill me for this, but Tim got somebody $600,000 off asking price recently. And that stuff is out there right now. You just have to get out there and make those offers. And I think a lot of people, because last year was so difficult and you had to make such crazy offers just to be considered to get in the game, that people are still a little bit gun shy and they're like, oh no, it's probably too far off from asking. It's going to be a waste of time. But it's not, y'all. Like, the correction is here. And I think it's been here for a little while. You can get those deals if you just get out there and make the offers. You can get those deals.
Yeah, I think, you know, we're beating the drum on one thing that we keep saying over and over, and it's numbers, numbers, numbers. That is so important. And no matter what the market is, you got to follow your numbers. If it's going up, you know, what makes a good deal is the numbers working for you. And that is just so important. And right now, you know, like Derek said, if the numbers work, you know, I see people get caught up. They hear this, oh, everything's cheap. And they just want to offer arbitrarily under asking, which is kind of the same mistake people make when it's up. They want to offer over asking, but they don't know why or what. So offering under is great, but you got to know what's your max number, you know, what's your top number. And if it works there, great. And if anything we do below that is awesome. I hadn't even told Avery this yet, but we just had another one this morning that we offered. It was a $2 million property, but we offered $2 million under, got it under contract. And then the appraisal came back $300,000 short. And we spent about 4 days negotiating it, but we ended up getting it at appraisal. So, you know, stuff like that can happen too, where, you know, you get it under contract, a number that works for you. And then sometimes you can make it better throughout, you know, the inspection process and the appraisal process.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that sellers are a little nervous because it's not as easy to turn around and resell a property as it was last year if it falls out of contract. So if you get 3 weeks into a deal and it doesn't appraise, they're more likely to come down some. They may not come down all the way, and not all sellers are going to be reasonable yet. You know, there's always going to be the unreasonable people on both ends of the deal out there right now. But once you're 3 weeks into a deal and you're only, you know, 5-6 days from closing date when an appraisal comes in, people are, I think, much more apt to negotiate now than they were last year, just to go ahead and get it closed with that closing date in sight. And I think that, Kelsey, you made a really good point earlier offline about mindset and positivity when going out there to get deals. So how do you think that affects being able to find a deal in the current market?
So I think negative people will watch the news and think, oh, I'm so scared. I don't know what's going to happen. And they just psych themselves out, and everything they see plays into this negative mindset. And actually, to Derek's point, these people who say, oh, when it drops, I'm going to be ready. Honestly, maybe those people, yeah, I think the market is just calling their bluff. That's just their excuse to not have invested previously. But I think going back, positive people will see that people are running and realize that there's opportunity to be had, and they really are ready. So I see this market as being a great opportunity for a variety of reasons. The asking price is lower. There aren't as many buyers. You don't have to fight anybody for a house. You can actually think about it. Maybe get some insurance quotes before you make a jump. The only thing that's not working in your favor at this time is interest rates. And you can have the seller buy down the interest rate as part of your negotiation. So that means everything is on your side. It may not be like 3% interest rates on your side, but I mean, you can buy it down. And like Avery was saying, your interest rate is not permanent. So I see a lot of upside in it.
Yeah. Yeah. And when the interest rates are super low, everybody is buying, which drives the prices way, way up, which is, you know, the entire reason that the Fed is lowering things. Not that they're, you know, they're working directly on mortgage rates. Those are indirectly related to the Fed interest rates, but they're raising them and people are getting scared and not buying. The goal is to slow things down. So now that we are pretty slow, it's a really good time to get in there and buy things and get good deals on them and get some discounts. So Kelsey, you mentioned having the seller buy down the interest rate. What does that mean exactly for people who are listening who might not understand that phrase?
So for a right price property, which there's prices are all over the map. There's people who still think it's February and people who don't. And some listings that have been on the market for a long time were priced that way back in January, February, March, potentially. They have fallen out of contract at some point, and then they just never got it back under contract. So those are probably not right price properties. And if they sat on the market, other people agreed they weren't willing to pay that price. So there's some opportunity to offer under ask to those people whose agents just couldn't convince them to lower the price, but maybe they've received no offers. But for a right price property, what I found people doing, because they're more willing to offer on a right price property, we may offer asking, but ask for 2% back in closing costs to buy down their interest rate. And it really plays into the mindset that most people have. They turn on the news, interest rates are high. It tracks with what I'm telling them in my like offer email. Then, you know, we want 2% back to buy down the interest rate. They know the interest rate's high. So it makes sense to them. And they don't accept it right away. It takes them a couple of days to kind of come around to it, but they don't get an offer on day one or two or three. And so they're not as quick to do it, but they do it. And they may not do, you know, the 3% I may have asked, we may get down to 1.5, but it usually works out.
Awesome. So if I'm a buyer, I'm going to my lender and saying, hey, how much would it take to buy down the rate to X amount? And there will be some limitations and some things depending on the lender about how much. So they'll tell you what that number is. And then in your offer to the seller, you ask them for X percent or X dollar amount in closing costs. And then those closing costs are allocated to buying down the rate is how that works. So I think that's a really great strategy to kind of help that, because a lot of people ask for closing costs anyway, but they're really only looking for to pay, you know, some of the cash out of pocket that it costs to get a loan. By the way, guys, I think I've said this before, but for anybody who doesn't know, some people don't understand that the closing costs are the buyer's responsibility. They're the buyer's cost to obtain the loan. They're not just what it costs to close a deal. They are the buyer's cost to buy that loan. You know, it costs money to get a loan, and that's what you're paying. When you always have to ask, and you can't assume that sellers are going to split anything. So you always have to ask them for a dollar amount, use that dollar amount, make sure you're allocating it towards the buy down of the interest rate, because if you don't tell your lender where you want it allocated, then they'll just throw it onto that cash up front. So just keep that in mind. Make sure you're asking the right questions. So we're going to switch gears for a minute.
I wanted to say one thing on it.
Okay.
One thing on it is, a really important question to ask initially is, what is my max seller paid closing cost for a property that is not owner occupied? Because it'll change. Like UWM with the mortgage shop uses, it'll be 6% if it's an owner occupied property, which that's not what we do, but it's 2% if it's non-owner occupied.
Yeah, exactly. What Kelsey's saying, just talk to your lender about what your max is. And then also understand going in that those are essentially credits, and there's gonna be a max amount of credits you can do. And it doesn't matter what those are going for. If you apply them toward buying down your loan, that's great. But that can, like when you get to inspection period, if they give you 2%, you've got 2%, it doesn't matter what it's going to. So you may, if you get it all up front, you may not be able to use that against, you know, anything that comes up in your inspection or other things. So just be aware, it's like a package that you can use. So
yeah, I'm gonna beat that horse one more time, because I didn't want that to be glossed over either. Everybody's hit it, but talk to your lender at the very beginning before you're putting offers in to know what your maximum the seller's maximum contribution is. It doesn't matter where it goes. The key to what we're talking about here is not so much that, you know, it's how we deliver it to the seller. We're all trying to get credits. We're all trying to save how much money we're going to have to put out of pocket. When you deliver it to a seller as, I'm asking for this credit because these interest rates are so high that I can buy it down, you have a better chance of getting it. I think that's the key to what we're talking about here. But as Tim just mentioned, recognize once you get that 2%, when you go through inspection, you can't negotiate that anymore. If there are other issues, now you're going to have to negotiate on price, but know what your lender is willing to do. Because I've had people say, well, ask for, you know, 4% to get back. And I said, well, what's your lender allow you to do? And they don't even know. So talk to the lender at the very beginning to find out what that is.
Another note on that. another note on that is talk, if you're talking to multiple lenders, ask them all, because it's likely to be different. I've had a couple instances lately where we've gotten a property under contract and the people switch lenders. And like, we got like a big, like I had one where they were allowed to do 6% and we got the whole 6%, got it under contract. They switched lenders because they thought they were getting a better deal. The new lender only allowed 2% and they didn't realize it. And so it ended up being a mess. So you gotta, you know, ask all the questions if you're going to be, you know, using different lenders or looking at different lenders. So.
Yeah. And you can negotiate 3%, but if your lender only allows 2%, that 1% will go back to the seller. And on that same note, if you, let's say you somehow negotiated $50,000 seller paid closing credits and your closing costs were only 20,000, that 30,000 goes back to the seller. It's a credit, not, you know, doesn't get refunded to you.
Right. Or you would have to do the remainder off the purchase price and not, it's not just cash in pocket. And it's kind of the reason why 2008 happened, because people would offer way over asking, like 100,000 over asking, and then ask for 100,000 in credit. So then they get 100,000 back in their pocket so they can go buy something else. And that's illegal now. So that's why there's all those limitations in place. Hey guys, if you're enjoying the content of our podcast, but you have additional short-term rental questions, we host a weekly live question session that you guys can join for free. It's at 1 p.m. Eastern on Thursdays. And if you head over to strquestions.com, you can sign up. So not only am I the host of this show, but I also own and manage my own properties, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have about short-term rental investing. So please join us anytime for a free weekly live Q&A on Zoom. Sign up at strquestions.com. Okay, switching gears a little bit. So I want to ask you guys as agents, when you're looking for deals for your clients, what is your favorite thing on the MLS about a listing that makes you go, okay, this one, I can probably get a good deal. These are the ones that you look for where you're like, all right, this one has an opportunity to be a good deal. I'll start. My favorite is crappy pictures. If a listing has crappy pictures, I'm like, bingo, I'm going to go look at this because it probably looks better in person than it does online. And I might be able to get a deal on it, because people who are just cruising Zillow or whatever might not click on it because the pictures are so terrible. So what do you guys think? What's your favorite thing to look at?
Well, the most obvious one is days on market, right? That's what most people are going to be looking at. If it's been on market 30 days, 60 days, something along those lines, that, you know, the seller's probably getting a little bit of anxiety at that point. They're trying to sell. So that's a key thing. One other thing that I look at that's a little bit more nuanced to it is price reductions, because days on market, if it's been on market for 6 months, but the price has never come down, that tells me that seller's not really looking to move it. They're just trying to see if they can get what they want. But if I'm seeing consistent price reductions every 15, 30 days, even if there's small reductions, that tells me that seller is looking to pick up an offer. He's trying to put that carrot out there. So that's one of the key things I look at.
As you're looking at time on market too, you know, ask your agent the question, has this been under contract before? Because there's a difference in something that's been on the market for 60, 90 days with no offers to something that's been under contract 4 times and fallen back out. You know, that may have issues that you want to know about. Doesn't mean, and sometimes those can be great ones to pick up too. Like if you're willing to take on something that somebody else wasn't, you don't know why these things fall out of contract, but it's just data. Doesn't mean it's good or bad, but it's another part of the piece of the strategy, you know, to dig into. You know, if you had something that I had one the other day that it fell out 3 times and the guy didn't even want to talk about it because of that. And we'll come to find out it fell out because of financing all 3 times, you know, it wasn't even an issue with the property and we ended up getting it. It was, the inspection was clean. So, you know, you just gotta, there's a lot of different things to look at when you're looking at all that.
Well, and I want to elaborate on that too, because I just bought a house personally that fell out of contract 3 times and it did have known issues. There were issues that were disclosed in the listing. The seller was actually offering a credit back to repair the issues right up front. But that can also be a great opportunity if you have the resources, the tools, and the knowledge and the comfort level to buy something that needs work. You're way ahead of the game. You're the only person that's even gonna offer on it because everybody else is scared of it. So if you've got those resources, then you should be looking at the ones that have fallen out of contract 3 times.
Yeah, and, I like Derek.
I was just going to kind of pound on Derek's drum again of you know, if they haven't lowered the price and they're not willing to, you know, don't offer on it, but if you offer on it and they don't budge, don't get too hung up on that one deal. You know, it's not like you just magically going to walk in and see something and offer on it and you're guaranteed to get it. Every seller's have a why they're selling. And you may have to go through 10 of them to find the right one that is the right why, and they're willing to make a deal. So don't get discouraged, I guess.
And what does it matter why a seller is selling?
No.
It doesn't matter. You're not, look, in the world, if you listen to all the old Bigger Pockets episodes, you heard this stuff talked about all the time. And when you were buying in 2009 and 10, when you were buying in 2009 and 10, and you were buying a lot of stuff that was off market and there was foreclosures and everything else, that was a different scenario. That's not the market or the world we live in right now. It's irrelevant. People are selling right now because they want to make money. Let me elaborate on that. There are opportunities out there. We're not always going to know. The easiest way to find out, first of all, if they have a decent agent on the listing side, they're not going to tell you that. If you're dealing off market, different strategy, different world. We're talking about deals on the MLS right now. You're not going to get that information. Your agent's not going to get it. You're not going to get it. No good list agent's going to release that to you. If they do give you some information, great, run on it. But don't worry about why they're selling. They're selling because they want to make money. You know, we're buying investment properties here. We're not buying, you know, grandma's house because grandma passed away. We're buying vacation rentals, and people are selling because they want to make some money on it, and just assume that that's the case. And then it's just a matter of figuring out how much money they want to make.
I have a lot of second homeowners who are selling. I mean, not I have them, like I'm representing them, but that's the houses that my clients are buying. A lot of times it is a second home that's a really underutilized rental. They just do it for, I don't know, Lagniappe, just some extra money, pay down the mortgage. But usually those people are selling because of a life change. They realize they haven't been to their beach house in 4 months. After their kids went off to college, their life changed. Now they're thinking about getting a lake house, and they know that, you know, Ted and Sue down the street sold their house and made a bunch of money. So throw it on the market and see what happens.
And those are
the people who let it sit for a while with no price reduction.
One key on that is there are motivated sellers out there. There are people on the MLS that do need to sell, that want to sell. But the point being is we're not going to find out before we make the offer. You know, it is a time when you're going to make a lot of offers. Start throwing offers out there, offers that make sense, whether they're low or whatever they are. Throw offers out there that make sense. But it may take you doing that 15 or 20 times before you find that seller that actually is motivated to sell. They are out there, but we've talked about this earlier, is not getting discouraged, is keep putting the offers out there. Eventually you'll find one that'll stick. Just don't get paralysis and don't get discouraged and don't get down because your offers aren't getting accepted. Last year, people were getting discouraged because they weren't getting accepted because they were making, you know, very high offers and very good offers, but there was just so much competition. We have completely flipped that 180 now, where we're making lower offers and we have to make a bunch before we find the seller that's actually motivated. Keep doing it.
Run your numbers, because asking prices are all over the place, just like they were when things were high, you know. And Avery brought up that one that we got that was $600,000 under. That wasn't like magic that I did. I mean, that was nothing I did. That was just a severely overpriced property. It wasn't anything magical about it. It was a nice place. I mean, and it was it was upwards of 2 million, but it was just massively overpriced. They priced it like it was on the upswing. Yeah, it was like a February swing, and they missed it, you know, and it sat and they got stuck, and they bought it for way less, and they still made great money. You know, they were still very happy, and the sellers were very happy in the end. They just were trying to capitalize on what was going on 6 months ago. So, the point is, you're not, you know, the same house down the street was for sale already for, you know, $600,000 less. So it's not like it was just some magic bullet. So.
So to answer your original question, which was, what do you look for? I used this. This is how I got my cabin. It had terrible pictures, to your point, terrible. It was like, it wasn't even the same pictures. It was like just whatever pictures they had cobbled together and were like super low res. It was awful. You could barely tell there was a hot tub. Like I could see it through the railings. This is for our cabin, our first one. And then it was listed in the wrong MLS. So, and I tell my clients to do this, that they need to set up. Not only will I set them up with a HAR.com, Houston Association of Realtors, that's our local MLS, but they should also set themselves up with a Realtor.com or a Zillow.com search, because my MLS will only show you, let's say you search Crystal Beach, it's going to show you listings in my MLS in Crystal Beach. But Zillow or Realtor.com is going to show you everything that's in that geographic area, including a few FSBOs. At least on Zillow, it will. There's a local, in Beaumont, there are agents who list, you know, their neighbor's second home or whatever else, or some kind of individual builders. And a lot of times the husband is a builder and the wife is a realtor. They'll list those houses in their, like their Beaumont MLS. So not in mine. So it'll show up in Zillow or Realtor.com. So it has less eyes on it. So if you make a Realtor.com or a Zillow.com search, you may be able to find something that has less eyes on it.
Yeah, I go for the days on market. Well, my favorite, I guess I should say, is days on market. And then to what Derek had said with price reductions, if you see them actively really trying to get rid of the property for whatever reason, then that's a really good indicator. And then on top of that, if you go into the history, which I don't know how y'all's MLS works, but as far as ours goes, you can go into the history and you can see what they got it for. And if there's a lot of equity in the home, based on, you know, just the history of it, the purchase history of it, then, you know, there's basically looking for wiggle room that the seller might have and see if the buyer's offer could really stand a chance or not. But that's what I like.
Yeah. And I want to hit back on the why is the seller selling question again. So you can ask that question all day, but even if a seller is selling, like if I am about to go bankrupt and I'm selling a house, I'm still probably not going to tell you, oh yeah, I'm going bankrupt. That's why. So here, please take this house for a huge discount. I'm going to be like, oh, you know, I'm just looking to move on to other things. So the likelihood that you're going to get a truthful, oh my God, they have to sell it right now, they're in serious trouble, is unlikely. So I'm not telling you not to ask it, but I'm just telling you that if you don't get a very specific answer, it's no reason to not move forward or make an offer or anything like that, because nobody's probably going to come. An agent would be doing their client a disservice and the client would be doing themselves a disservice if they told you anything other than, oh yeah, they're looking to sell to move on to other things. So just keep that in mind. That's the answer you're going to get. And anybody who knows what they're doing is going to give that answer.
That's a great point. It's actually unethical for list agents to really disclose too much. Yeah. That breaks their ethics that they're not really allowed to do that. I mean, if they're got severe medical things going on or family stuff, they're not supposed to disclose that.
And we know that because we're all under the same, we all went to the same classes. Like us asking an agent for basically information they're not supposed to provide us, it's a dumb question, essentially. There are dumb questions, and that's one of them. And I'm not really going to answer.
Brutal,
if they
Kelsey.
Reveal it,
brutal.
If they reveal it because I chit chat with them, that's fine. But and I will tell you if they basically hint at what their reason is for selling. But Crystal Beach is a small place. You can't just go ask for all personal details and have people want to work with you again. That's just not how life works.
Totally. Brutally honest.
If it's coming down to people wanting to put in low offers, I kind of suggest to not get hung up on one property. If at that point you're really kind of playing a numbers game, because there's sellers that's going to accept that and there's sellers that's not. And all you're really trying to find is the property that's, you know, you've already run your numbers, like run your numbers on all of them for sure. Make sure that everything makes sense. But you know, what one seller is going to say no to, you know, maybe you put three offers in, one of those people might say yes, you know, and don't put them all in at the same time. Just, you know, play your numbers and eventually you might get the yes that you're looking for to get the good deal.
Yeah, if you don't ask, you don't know. Worst that can happen is you get told no, which there's a lot worse things.
Yeah.
Well, cool, guys. So I think that's a really good synopsis from a bunch of different agents that work in a bunch of different markets that specialize in this on what to look for and how to get deals and what to expect and how the market is right now. Do any of you have any closing words that you want to make sure listeners hear about this before we go?
One of my favorite quotes when we're talking about submitting offers and trying to find things, I say it's a quote, it's a revision of a Wayne Gretzky quote, but I look at it as you're guaranteed not to get 100% of the offers that you don't submit. So when you're getting into that paralysis and you're afraid you're going to offend the seller, you're going to lowball it. Well, you're not going to get anything if you don't put the offer in. Put the offer in if it makes sense. If your agent's complaining to you because they don't want to put the offer in, have that conversation. Don't be rude to each other, but have a conversation. The reality is we get paid when we make commission. If we're not writing offers, we're not going to get paid either. You're not going to get a property if you don't put it under contract. So put out the offers. If your agent's giving you a really hard time, find another agent. I hate to say that, especially if they're a short-term shop agent, but if they're not a short-term shop agent, you certainly should be calling us. We all have bad days. We're all humans. So if your agent gives you a little bit of flack about it, maybe give them some grace and ask them, hey, talk to me here, because we need to put offers in. So get out there, submit the offers, and quit being a baby.
All right, Derek. Well, and if you are using a short-term shop agent, just email agents@theshorttermshop.com and we'll get everything taken care of for you. If you want to work with a short-term shop agent, like any of these lovely agents here on this call with all of this great information, again, email agents@theshorttermshop.com and we will get you taken care of and we will get working on getting you those great deals that are out there and that are coming down the pipe. It really is the most exciting time to be a buyer in real estate investing in the past few years. So hoping you guys are as excited as we are at the shop. Thank you so much, guys, for coming on, and we will catch you next time.